With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Pastor Clint Schneckloff. He is the lead pastor of Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Fayetteville. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Last time you were here, we talked about Labor Day and how it's the unofficial end of summer. So I feel good now talking about autumn reads.
Yes.
What's our first autumn read that you're recommending?
So, Range by David Epstein. The subtitle is Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World.
Oh, I love that subtitle.
I knew you would like this because you're a generalist.
I have to be.
You're required to be.
Yes. And Roy Reed, the late Roy Reed, journalist extraordinaire, always said, you know, journalists have to have a thin knowledge of a deep amount of subjects.
Right. Your only specialization is you have to know how to sit in that chair in front of that microphone.
Right. Everything else is like a thin line.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And pastors are, I mean,
sure,
generalists often, you know, by necessity of our work also. So I probably have a bias in favor of the argument that David Epstein is making in this book. But I'm remembering, before I read the book, one of the things I was remembering as I was thinking about range and specialization is when my wife was in graduate school at UW-Madison, she got a job in the limnology library.
In the limnology?
Limnology library, which maybe all your listeners already know what limnology is.
But let's assume somebody doesn't.
But I didn't before she got the job. And so limnology is the study of fresh water.
Okay.
It's an
important study.
Yeah, in Wisconsin, which actually has more lakes than Minnesota, the land of 10,000 lakes.
Right.
It's a huge area of study. So for one, I was like, wow, there's a whole library just about limnology. But then I would go down and visit her, and I would meet the faculty and people that were doing research at the limnology department. And I would go in, and I'd be like, okay, so yeah, you're studying this thing about like some kind of like bacteria that lives at the bottom of a stream. And then I was like, what do you think about so-and-so's research over there? And they're like, oh, I don't know anything about that. They're at the bottom of the stream. I study the shore of the stream.
Right.
And I don't know anything about this other thing, even though you're all... So not only did I not even know what limnology was, within that department, they didn't know about each other's stuff. That's like hyper-specialization.
That's fascinating. That's fascinating to me.
And in big universities, I think that's common. You know... Or I can remember also working in
bureaucracies.
Bureaucracies, whatever. People are super hyper-focused. So what David Epstein is doing is he's saying, actually, there's some real dangers with that, and there's real value in more general approaches. So he starts the book. Epstein has written a lot in the sports world. Mm-hmm. That's been his kind of like, he's a magazine writer and does a lot of stuff around sports. So he starts out with that, and he has this whole opening about the cult of the head start. And, you know, he compares two stories between the famous golfer who was already, you know, winning awards at age two.
Mm-hmm. That would be Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods, yeah. Right. And then he compares him to... Roger Federer, who apparently didn't start playing tennis until he was like a teenager or something.
But has done okay for himself.
Seems to have done okay.
Yes, yes.
And so you have this culture around of people wanting to have their children excel at something, and what they think the way that they'll excel is by getting started really early, and that whole notion of the 10,000 hours that
right.
you have to log all that time. But then he gives all these examples of people who absolutely didn't do that, and they still have excelled. So then what's that about?
Well, and I shudder to think of the people, you know, for every Serena and Venus Williams or Tiger Woods or someone like that who did spend all that time, there are others who did and, you know, didn't make it to the top of their profession.
Mm-hmm.
And I just worry about what their childhood might have been like.
Yeah.
Spending all those hours and being told you got to be good at this, and then hopefully they find something else.
Right. Yeah. So in most instances, it wasn't like the people weren't doing anything. It was
right.
like they were getting a range of experience in different areas. So it wasn't that Federer wasn't playing any sports.
Right.
It's just he was
You're directed,
trying
it
different
seems
stuff out.
Earlier and earlier to pick that sport.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So he's got a bunch of chapters in here that are about that, about the kind of that, like less, less is more in some instances, and shifting around to different kinds of experience has a lot of benefits in a lot of different fields and areas. And then he starts getting into some of these, he really prods at a whole bunch of like basic assumptions that we have. And one of them is, one of my favorite chapters is the chapter, the title, this is a great title, Lateral Thinking with Withered Technology. So Nintendo, the gaming company, they were not doing very well back in this one period in the early days of Nintendo, and this is kind of before the emergence of video games. They made regular games, toys.
Oh, okay.
And they weren't doing very well. And the CEO was walking past a room one day and saw this guy sitting at this desk. And the guy sitting at the desk was like on custodial staff and had taken some pieces of wood and had nailed them together and made this like one of those scissor arm things where if you pull the levers, it reaches a little thing out and grabs something.
Right.
And instead of getting mad at that guy, he was like, hey, why don't you turn that into a toy? And so he made a toy that was a grabber and put three colorful balls with it, and they marketed this, and it did really well. Like, they actually made money on that toy. So he was like, well, why don't you give us some more ideas, you know? Mm-hmm. And they started shifting into the gaming world as there was this emergence of these different kinds of new electronic technologies. But this custodian, his philosophy typically was to take what was already out there, and instead of trying to get it like one better or the best thing of the new technology, he would take a withered technology and use it in a lateral way. And this was highly successful. And the most successful thing that he ever designed that was like that was the Game Boy.
And it did well.
Yes. And I don't know if you remember, but when the Game Boy came out, there were already half a dozen other handheld gaming devices that had better graphics, that were color, that were had more memory, all that kind of thing. The Game Boy was clunky, black and white, small little screen. But what it didn't have in terms of all that innovation, what it did have was you could drop it and it wouldn't break. You could drop it in the toilet and it wouldn't break. It was very hardy and durable.
So if I'm spending money to get my child a device, I want the one that isn't going to break.
Yeah. And some other features where even though it wasn't the highest end, it served all these other purposes, and that thing just blew, the Game Boy blew up. You know, it was like one of the best-selling electronic device of the 20th century. So that was his tendency. And move forward to today, Nintendo still does this. So if you want the most graphics-heavy, highest-end gaming system, you buy a PlayStation or a Xbox. But if you want a lateral move with older technology, you get the Nintendo, where they have been coming out with the motion sensor stuff. Mm-hmm. Motion sensor's been around for a while, right? But they just came up with a new use. And so the Nintendo device is different. And whenever you read reviews, people are like, well, it doesn't have nearly as much like graphics capacity and whatever, and that's not the point.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is, so Epstein's subtitle again is Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. Mm-hmm. Also, don't you think we're able to converse with each other more if we're generalists? I mean, right, nothing against specialty. If I have an aneurysm, I want a brain surgeon.
Yeah.
Someone who... But knowing more things about more things seems like it can help us make human connections more. So
yes.
Just being a generalist in your life, if you can be.
That's right. That's why I'm always regretful that we've moved away so quickly from, like, say, a more general educational system for university and for college, like liberal arts.
Learning for learning's sake.
Yeah, as opposed to, you know, like... Nothing against the business department per se, but if you're going to be in business your whole life, wouldn't you like to have exposure to, say, the Russian novel before you get focused in on your work?
And I'm sure there are faculty in all colleges who would agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And probably there's business classes that teach Russian novels in their classes. But yeah, there's this wider scope that can be beneficial on many levels.
Pastor Clint Schneckloth is the lead pastor at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Fayetteville, and he's a regular visitor to Ozarks at Large. He'll have more autumn recommendations for us to read over the next few weeks. Today, he discussed Range, Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World, written by David Epstein.